Hello and welcome to NRL Live episode 28, and with me as always is Tigers MS. How are you, mate?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. And St. Peter, how's it going?
Very good, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm very well. You would have noticed there wasn't any music at the start of the show. We are dealing with a couple of little technical issues, but I think as far as the sound is concerning, everything is A-OK, and that's the most important thing, of course. Tonight, very important show, huge show as a matter of fact. Not only will we wrap up the minor premiership with round 26 results, look at the top eight, and do the season review of the Knights, Titans, Tigers and Dragons, but we're going to cover two major breaking stories from today. Nathan Tinkler in financial crisis there, how will that affect the Newcastle Knights? And also Gillian McLachlan of the AFL says no to the CEO position of the NRL. Absolutely huge news, and very disappointing that the NRL could not land their man, even though he's going to remain an assistant down in Melbourne. We're going to chat about all that and, of course, world of sport and our predictions for week one of the finals. But first of all, guys, the men have been separated from the boys. The top eight is Canterbury in first. Second spot is Melbourne. Then it is Souths, then Manly, fifth, North Queensland Cowboys, 6th Canberra, 7th Cronulla, and 8th is the Brisbane Broncos. Pete, who's going to take it out?
I'm going to go out there. I'm going to say that Melbourne are going to win the competition. I think these guys have got some absolute class there, as we know, with blokes like Slater.
Yep.
Cameron Smith, obviously. Young bloke will go with that job very well for them this year as well. And yeah, for me, I think Melbourne, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder over losing the premierships there a couple of years ago. Bellamy, probably one of the best coaches in the business, so I think they might just be able to scrape it through. It's going to be close. I think they'll be playing Manly in the grand final is my tip.
Well, I like your tip. I'm actually thinking something very similar. Look, I've got Melbourne Manly making it. Look, there's always the chance that one team may come, like the Cowboys. But I do think Melbourne at this stage are favourites just because of what they've achieved in the past and how they've come into the competition. They haven't had it stretched too far and still finished second. So the automatic two home games, and also the fact that they've got those big names. Like you said, Pete, Tigers MS, how do you see it finishing up?
I think Manly's going to go back to back. I think just the experience and everything else that they have, plus they haven't really kicked into gear yet, which is pretty good for a team that hasn't kicked into gear to come in the top four. But my smoky is Canberra.
Wow. I don't think they'll get past this week. But anyway, we'll discuss that later. The Rabbitohs, 18, beat the Knights 6 on Friday night, and the Broncos, 19, defeated the Panthers 12. That sealed a top four berth for the Rabbitohs and a top eight berth for Brisbane. There were still permutations and computations going into Saturday. The Seagulls put one to bed by getting a top four spot over when they beat Gold Coast 24-16, and then the Storm made sure that the Tigers would miss out on the top eight this year with a 26-6 drubbing of the West Tigers at Leichhardt Oval. We will discuss all about the woes of the West Tigers in season 2012 in West Tigers Live. Make sure that you download that on www.paulygsports.com. The Bulldogs wrapped up the minor premiership on the same night with a 42-10 thrashing of the Sydney Roosters. Sunday, it was really down to what positions the Sharks and the Raiders would finish. Well, the Raiders came from 22-6 down to defeat the Warriors 42-22 over at Mount Smart Stadium, which needed the Sharks then to win to get a home semi-final. They weren't able to do that against the Cowboys. North Queensland finally getting a victory in Sydney 36-22, puts them into good stead leading into the finals. While the battle of the retirees, the Parramatta Eels versus the St. George Illawarra Dragons, well, it was pretty one-sided. Sorry, Pete, didn't think it was the highest quality of matches, but your team did get out on top to send Ben Hornby and Dean Young away, winners 29-8 over the Wooden Spooners, the Parramatta Eels. I guess for the eight that didn't make it, you know, there's not much point sort of going over the last week's results to do that, with the exception of course, the West Tigers, who had it all to play for on Saturday night and weren't able to perform. But like I said, we'll discuss that on West Tigers Live. Let's now look at the season review for the four teams that we didn't cover last week that are now out. We'll start with the Newcastle Knights. I thought the highlights, I thought Willie Mason coming to the club helped. Also, the late season form, they certainly turned around a slow start to the season and at least put themselves in with a fighting chance with a few rounds left. Just had a very tough run into the finals, couldn't do it. Lowlights, well, they found it hard to score points, I thought, for most of the games. Darius Boyd didn't really make the impact maybe they were hoping. Very inconsistent in the halves. Don't quite know how they're going to resolve that going into 2013. Tigers MS, I know that you like to follow the Knights. You would have followed them all season. How did you make their season in a nutshell?
Yeah, I think the injury to Kurt Gidley kind of killed off their creativeness. And the early season form or lack of for Darius Boyd, they just didn't seem like they quite believed that they were meant to be in the top eight, if that makes sense, though, until later on in the season when it was probably a bit too late and a bit too much of a mountain to climb.
Yeah, yeah. That, I think that belief is very much spot on. They also had, obviously, the pressure of expectation up there with Wayne Bennett moving there. Very tough as well for them, it seemed. The Gold Coast Titans, well, Aiden Caesar and Matt Schrammer, I thought they were definitely highlights. They certainly had good improvement after the financial crisis was solved. Unfortunately, they just left themselves a little bit too much to do at the end. The lowlights, that poor start certainly cost them dearly, and the loss to Penrith when the season was on the line was disappointing. Highlights, I think you could also add in Nate Miles. Pete, how did you see the Gold Coast Titans season in review for 2012?
Agreed. I thought that they improved. They improved quite a lot of the previous season. Mind you, they'd have to since they ran last. But yeah, it's good to see Blake, like Scotty Prince, return to a bit of form this year. Yeah. We discussed Aiden Caesar a number of weeks on this show, and he's one of the hot young talents of the NRL.
Yeah.
For these guys to psychologically overcome those issues that were around the financial issues very early on in the season, where it looked like the club was within real, real danger, and overcome that and string a few wins together and, you know, be on the edge of the eight, I thought was a pretty decent achievement. Interesting to see how they go next year now with the addition of Dave Taylor, of course.
I think they're specials next year to make the eight personally, but we shall see. The West Tigers, well, what a season that started full of promise, ended up in gross disappointment and 10th spot. The highlights, I thought Aaron Woods and Keith Galloway up front were very strong, particularly Woods, only 21 years of age. I believe he played every game, he played a lot of minutes too. Definitely is going to be a State of Origin player of the future. I thought Bo Ryan definitely had had probably his best season to date. He certainly tried hard, as did Liam Fulton. You could probably put him in the same category. And obviously, maybe not so much for the Tigers, but for New South Wales, Robbie Farah really coming of age as a top-level footballer. The lowlights, well, Benji Marshall just never really got it together this year. He switched between 6 and 7, and he's found it hard to play without that stabilising partner in the halves. The missed tackle count, they led the league in missed tackles. You're not going to win a premiership or even come close with that sort of stat. They seemed to lack toughness up the middle. Had a lot of guys that worked hard, already mentioned Liam Fulton, Chris Hynton's another, Gareth Ellis, of course, who's leaving. But they just seemed to lack that toughness once Galloway and Woods went off. And finally, the big signing, the marquee signing of Adam Blair, probably the only reason why he's not the worst signing of the year is because of Chris Sando for Parramatta Eels. And Tigers MS, I know we're going to talk about it more on West Tigers Live, but in a sentence or two, can you wrap up that season from the West Tigers?
The attitude stunk, basically.
Yeah.
They had the talent and the skill, but it only gets you that far before other teams, which are just as talented or just as skillful, actually have a work ethic.
Yeah, harsh words, but true, I am afraid to say. Finally, St. George Illawarra Dragons. The highlights for them, I thought Brett Morris improved, although in the end he did move from back to the wing, but obviously he had a great season, particularly playing that third State of Origin game. Look, Mitch Rain, I've only got good things to say about the young hooker. He really does look like he's got the goods, and I'm not talking about the game against the Warriors where he left with the gastro. I'm talking about his performance on the field. And on the low lights, they did seem to have a difficulty scoring points. They obviously, with the worst point scoring record in the league, that's a bit of an understatement, or a statement obvious of the obvious. But the halves did seem to be an issue. Ben Hornby retiring next year. That will get a bit of a shake-up. Big year next year for Steve Price. St. Peter, it's your team. You followed them closely all year. Can you wrap up their season for us now?
Absolutely. It summed up in a couple of things there that you touched on. Fourth best defence in the league, worst attack. And worst attack in 16, you don't deserve to make the eight. You don't deserve to win too many games. Yeah. And that basically sums it up. There are people out in the back line there like Vito, when he's playing out the right, or Vito, or whoever the right winger may have been different times, hardly ever saw the ball. The ball was always going left. The Dragons just became too predictable. What worked for them in 2009, 2010, a bit of 2011, isn't working anymore. A few players there a year older, absolutely, they'll miss the strength and experience of blokes like Ben Hornby, Dean Young. But, it was time for them to retire in all fairness. I think they've made the right decision to go out. Well, they're still good first graders. A couple of issues there. Basically short a player all year. Not having Tim Moulton there, I think, may have affected them a little bit. So there's that constant shuffle with the fullback. The best players, clearly for me, Jason Nightingale, still Mr. Consistent. Brett Morris, brilliant, just about every week. Trent Merrin really stood up, and I thought was should have been selected in the third State of Origin.
I totally agree.
And Mitch Rain, yeah, absolutely best. You know, he made his debut last year, but he was great this year, and we'll put a lot of pressure on Mr. Farah for Origin next year. We'll surely have the country hook a spot that time.
Wow, big call. Farah had an awesome Origin series. But, all right, awesome, Pete. Let's move straight on. The AFL deputy, Gillian McLachlan, has knocked back an offer from the ARL Commission to be Rugby League's new chief executive. The decision has been announced in a statement posted on the AFL's website, which basically says the AFL Chief Operating Officer, Gillian McLachlan, has confirmed he will remain with the AFL, resisting the lure of the National Rugby League CEO position. McLachlan said he continued to enjoy the challenges associated with developing and growing Australian football. There is still much to achieve at the AFL as we continue to strategically position the code for ongoing growth in popularity and participation. And the AFL CEO, Andrew Demetriou, said he was pleased McLachlan would remain a key member of the AFL executive. Gill has played an important role in many of the AFL's significant commercial outcomes in recent years and still has much to contribute to the AFL's future strategic direction. Tigers MS, is this a kick in the teeth to the NRL and the ARL Commission?
Yes and no. I mean, it proves that the job isn't exactly a blue ribbon one. But on the other side of the coin, it doesn't mean that, I heard that this guy was actually quite good. Mm. He may have been promised something, by the AFL, in the near future. But if he doesn't want to do the job, then I'd prefer you to get someone who wants to do it. And possibly someone who actually likes the game. Might be the way to go. I'm not saying you get an old footballer in there, but perhaps someone who does have a league background or at least supports league.
Mm. Look, David Gallup wasn't sort of a league man through and through. They've said they don't want to go down that road. But there's only one person on the ARL Commission that is a leaguey, and that's Wayne Pearce. Peter, is it right that they have deliberately looked away from a player or a person that is involved with the NRL or has an involvement with rugby league in general for this post?
That has been reported, yes, because there's some very bright people involved in rugby league, particularly the chief executive of the Bulldogs, Todd Greenberg, has been mentioned in the last few weeks. But once again, they don't want to go down that path of employing someone in the top job who has had some sort of club affiliation. Now, if you remember the issues that were around when Ken Arthurson, as good a job as you could probably say that he did, or it's around in terms of perceived bias towards Manly and so on. So they probably want to avoid that sort of thing, which I personally agree with. I think from a business management point of view, it's very good to bring in an outsider.
But surely the ARL Commission would stop that bias. Surely that if they did put in, let's say, Todd Greenberg, that just the fact the ARL Commission is actually running or governing the game, and the CEO is doing exactly that, he's the chief executive officer, not the dictator that perhaps Gallup was and perhaps Arthurson was, that wouldn't be an issue. I mean, I don't understand how it's an issue unless they're basically saying the guy we're going to get is going to run the game in a dictatorial way, and we're just going to step back and kind of just manage things from behind.
It's not actually, you make a good point, it's not absolutely clear what the new role will be, is it? You know, it's,
no.
I was surprised initially that when the commission came about that David Gallup was still in his position. I was of the understanding that the commission going to be running the game.
And then, it was an agreement for by news or brought about on the news side of things. That for them to give up the game, one of their criteria was that David Gallup had to run the game for the next 5 years.
Mm.
So obviously, from that standpoint, that was completely thrown out the window. They said yes, and then once the deal was signed and red inked, they burn it by getting rid of him. But you know, potentially with the blessing of news, we don't really know, but that's what happened. But certainly that was why he got brought in, because you're right, it did sort of seem odd at the time.
Absolutely. But in relation to Mr. McLaughlin from the AFL, you know, maybe he flew to Sydney for an interview or something and got sunburnt and was a bit worried about his umbrella business down there. I'm not sure what was. It could be other reasons, as Ron alluded to.
If that umbrella business wouldn't go far right now in Sydney, it's been beautiful weather.
Absolutely stunning.
Well, like Tigers MS said, I guess if he doesn't want it, well, I'm sure they'll find someone that does. But look, I personally think it is a big blow that, you know, they pursued McLaughlin so heavily only to be rejected. It's not something that you want, such a high level position and such media scrutiny on it, to be told no, and certainly told no in such a public manner.
There may also be something in Mr. McLaughlin's contract that says that he cannot work for an opposition sport for a certain period too. I know that they do that in the private sector, in a competitive world. So
But that stuff would have come out. I mean, this has come down the line. It's gone through, you know, the words last week. They didn't offer him enough money. They had to go and give him a new offer. Like, were they just toying with us? I mean, Tigers MS, was Demetrio in on this the whole way? Was it, he said, string him along and then publicly humiliate them?
Well, quite possibly. I mean, he has chatted to him about it previously, especially when he was in London. They were both in London, actually, not chatting to it. So maybe McLaughlin's made this so public that the AFL, if they wanted to keep him, had to top up his deal or do something special for him that made him want to stay. Maybe he was just using it as a bargaining chip. It's a possibility.
Yeah. Well, sport players, you know, in all sports around the world do that. So, you know, that's a good point too. Look, it's something I think we could discuss in more detail. I'm sure we will next week when more of the details come to light, and maybe when they have actually picked the CEO, who knows how long this is taking, whether it will be done another week. But we will discuss it more here on NRL Live. Of course, you can catch NRL Live at www.paulygsports.com each and every week, and you can follow me on Twitter at @PaulyGSports. Tigers MS is at TigersMS78. We're still waiting for Pete's Twitter account. I'm sure it's coming soon. I'm sure.
I'm very busy. Yeah.
Positive.
It's on its way. It's in the planning.
It's on its way. Another huge story today. Actually, I can't find it now. It was posted on the Sydney Morning Herald site, but maybe it's been taken down. Maybe it's been pushed to the side. Nathan Tinkler, the Newcastle Knights owner, is in a financial crisis where he can't pay his debts, and they potentially are going to have to take action against him. It's going to go to court, I believe, is what I had read. And like I said, I can't find the article anymore, so I'm sorry that I can't name the company that's taking it to court.
It was something to do with it was something to do with Boca Land that they were going to use for some some kind of purpose that didn't eventuate.
Yes.
And that was a lot of the debt. I think the total debt, I was reading it today, the total debt was something in the realms of 696 million, something like that.
Wow.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously he lives in Singapore now. He's moved, him and his family moved in June, I'm reading. You know, there's other incidences that have occurred over the last couple of years. The government didn't give him the right to do another coal mine, I believe, and that was one of the issues why he's, you know, financially maybe not in a stronger position. Another one is the company he owns. One of the companies he owns is a horse breeding or ownership that's failing quite miserably. The people involved in their company haven't been paid apparently since for their superannuation since November last year. So a lot of things going on. It's all allegedly, obviously. We're not saying this is fact. This is just what we're reading and worried as fans of the NRL, and, you know, not exclusively fans of the Knights, but certainly don't want to see a team in Newcastle have more difficulty. They've gone through enough. Tigers MS, we have spoken about the Tinkley issue earlier this year when he walked away from the soccer club, the football club. You know, is this cause for concern again up in Newcastle?
Look, it might be. I think it just depends on how he angles it. You don't know, like, these guys have that much money floating around that you don't know they can just sell one thing and it normally sorts out everything else. Yeah. But if he is truly in a bit of strife, and the Tinkler Sports Group in particular is in strife, then it might be a very interesting time coming up in Newcastle over the next year. I'm not sure how they would get out of it, whether they'd go back to being run by leagues clubs as they were previously, I think it was, before he purchased them.
It might have been the Newcastle Wests. They were quite a strong...
Yeah, so you never know, and you never know what that's going to do to contracts of Wayne Bennett, etc. Mm. So it could be a very interesting off-season.
Pete, is this an indictment of ownership in of an NRL team, or is it just specific to this gentleman, Nathan Tinkler?
I think generally it does raise some general concerns. It is specific to Nathan Tinkler. I was thinking of when Bennett signed with Newcastle, he said he did like the private ownership idea, and he certainly did have that up in Brisbane with Paul Kirby Morgan, Barry Branch. It was privately owned, and as we know, very successful. Tinkler is an interesting one. I said I have memories of his burnt-out black Ferrari being found by the side of the road in Newcastle up there about 18 months ago, which looks highly suspicious. I won't say anything more than that, but I don't want to be sued. It does raise concerns over this private ownership. I jokingly said to a Newcastle lady I bought a ticket from last year at a game up there, I said, I heard Tinkler's going to sell you and turn you into an ice hockey team, and she laughed, but, you know, I'm wondering how close you can be. It is certainly a bit of a concern. I hope for Newcastle's sake that it is resolved. If any problem there, it doesn't sort of really eventuate too much. And if so, it's resolved quickly. But I would hope they had lawyers all over the purchase of the Knights and have some fail safes there if the situation was to eventuate.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, guys, pretty heavy NRL live for this week. We should talk more on the field stuff. It is week one of the finals, so let's kick it off with the Friday night game. Should be an absolute beauty. The Dogs versus the Eagles. Tigers MS, who do you see winning this one?
Yeah, I'm going to say Manly. Probably, I think they've got some real Will Show Des kind of attitude going on, as Manly love to have a bit of drama and hate surrounding them. And I think they'll do the job. I think they've got the kick chase and the kickers, more importantly, to pin Barber down. Mm. Which, if you cut down Barber's time and Barber's returns, it does cut out a lot of what Canterbury can do.
Yeah, look, I think Manly are coming good at exactly the right time. They've got the experience, obviously, that the premiers from last year. They're going to be very hard to beat. Des Hasler is there, can get the Dogs up, but It's a pretty inexperienced outfit when it comes to finals football. It's just a different ball game altogether. I'm picking Manly. Pete, which way are you going?
I agree with the gentleman. Make it a trifecta. I'm going for Manly to win this one. It will be close, but I think just a little bit of extra class from these blokes like Glenn Stewart, Brett Stewart have been there before. This wonder kid at halfback, Daly Cherry Evans, you know, he hasn't had second-year syndrome at all. And I think he'll lead Manly to they'll make the grand final again this year, Manly. And I'll beat Canterbury on Friday night. There won't be a lot in it. But yeah, I'm picking Manly to win.
Well, Pete, I'll stay with you. The Storm are hosting the Rabbitohs. Souths have been very impressive this year, but they still don't have a great record against top eight teams. Can they go down to Melbourne and come away with the victory?
This is a really, really tough gig, like to finish fourth and be going to Melbourne in the
finish
first...
third.
Ah, third, I think. Third, so yeah.
So it's even tougher,
you know. It raises questions about this home and away finals system, but anyway.
Well, it's not a sudden death game for them. So
no,
that's
it's not. That's true. The South Sydney, it's once again one of these, a bit like the Bulldogs, probably lack a bit of finals experience. There's certainly old Inglis has been there before. Blokes like Sam Burgess, etc., played for their country. I really liked the way South Sydney beat Newcastle the other night. South Sydney would not have beaten Newcastle in a game like that where in previous years where the pressure was on and there was a big atmosphere going for Newcastle, the old boys there. This is going to be a very close game. Mark my words, I'll say Melbourne by four.
Tigers MS, do you concur with Pete?
Yeah, Melbourne are going to win, and I reckon they're going to win pretty comfortable, and I think Souths are going to be bounced out in straight sets in the finals, to be honest. I think this year is their learning year in the finals. Next year they'll be a bit tougher against the better teams.
Yeah, look, Adam Reynolds has done a good job at halfback. He's still a rookie. John Sutton, never really picked him as a 5'8". He's had some good games there. This is make or break for John Sutton. He's got to be the life of the South Sydney Party if they are going to go anywhere in this final series. I don't see it happening. I see more of the ball-playing back rower. I think Melbourne will win that game. Like the Seagulls, they're coming good at the right time. They've got the experience. They're playing at home as well. On top of that, they should win. And Souths, yes, very much in danger if they lose that of facing a pretty good team or pretty informed team, either the Raiders or the Sharks the following week, I believe it will be. So,
correct.
You know, it's not going to be easy for them, and I think you're right. I think they're in danger of being bounced. Cowboys and the Broncos. I'll go first again. I think Brisbane have struggled mightily attacking. They certainly did some good things in the second half last week, but it was again on the back of their strong forward pack. North Queensland aren't going to lie down like Penrith did last week. In fact, they won't need to lie down because they'll probably win by at least 30. Pete, how do you see it going?
I don't know about 30, but yeah, I think the Cowboys will win quite convincingly. I see it looks interesting looking at the Broncos, what's happened to them in the last 6 weeks or so. It looks like they've just lost all creativity. Peter Wallace is trying hard, but their attack just looks impotent, basically. Cowboys led by Thurston and Matty Bowen at home. They're always usually some very good games between these two, but I think the Cowboys will get them up there. I think North Queensland is coming from everywhere.
And Tigers MS, your take on it?
Yeah, the Cowboys will hammer them. If the Cowboys don't win, they've blown their best chance since 05.
And the Raiders are playing the Sharks. It's in Canberra. Amazingly enough, Canberra managed to get a home final when 6 weeks ago, I think they were 13th. However, neither of these teams have done well at home. They've performed better on the road. And in fact, in the two times they've met each other earlier this year, the Sharks smashed the Raiders in Canberra, while the Raiders did the same to the Sharks in Cronulla. So I'm going to go with that trend continuing and picking the away team in as the Sharks. Tigers MS, you're picking the Raiders as your dark horse. I'm assuming that in this sudden death game, that means they're going to win.
Yes, they have been taking their, they've been staying at the Eagle Hawk out there on the Federal Highway.
That's right.
For home games. It seems to be working, so they're keeping on doing it. So I think they've got the momentum, to be honest, and they've got way more points in them than the Sharks do. And I think that Canberra, when they stick to the game plan like they did last week against the Warriors, you saw what happened when they went away from it, when they stick to it, their defence and their attack grows in leaps and bounds, and so I think they'll continue on in that vein.
Pete, one of you and my favourite player, Nathan Gardner, was due to make a comeback in this match, but his passport was actually not valid. He couldn't fly to New Zealand to play, and now he hasn't been named in the 20-man squad that's going down there. Tigers MS spoke about the lack of attack in the Sharks, and I think that'll be a bit of a blow, but do you think they can overcome that and get the victory down in Canberra?
No, in a word. I think that Cronulla have had a pretty decent season up to this point, or by Cronulla standards over the last 47 years or so. But I think that after Origin, they've just gone downhill, and maybe that's just not used to having your players back up after Origin. A lot of clubs have found that difficult over the years, and they're just faltering at the wrong time, and Canberra have just hit the last ball in the Melbourne Cup, and they're just coming under the post. The game against Canterbury was brilliant. Large part of it I only saw the second half against the Warriors last week, and 22-6 at half time, I thought, well, gee, this is a test. But they just absolutely blitzed them in the second half. And I think Canberra will put them away down there by about 14. On the back of a very underrated bloke called Josh McCrane, who deserves far more rap than he gets.
Well, mate, he's getting some raps on this show, I can tell you. While you were away, I think we speak. Tigers MS and I even suggested that he could be a bolter for Origin next year.
Absolutely.
He's a good player, and since Sam Williams, who didn't play, by the way, last week, but they've got a nice little combination going there, and Reece Robinson, I tell you what, Brisbane are missing him, because he's a live wire.
He's really developed, and you know what? He's got a link to the Dragons. He's Ricky Walford's cousin.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, his cousin.
There you go.
Better go.
All right, guys, we should do World of Sport just quickly here at the end of the show. Tigers MS, what have you got for us?
Well, I've got an Olympic story. I know people might be getting sick of them by now, but this is an Olympic party story. The men's hockey team, Germans Olympic hockey team, is facing a $600,000 bill for damages after the party they held on a cruise ship to celebrate their gold medals got out of hand. After their 2-1 win against Holland, the Germans let off some steam on the MS Dutchland in London's West India Quay on the August the 11th in a party organised by a Berlin-based events firm. The players reported to have drained all the alcohol available on board, and pictures in the German media show the squad dousing each other with champagne while downing glasses of beer and smoking cigars. Glass was broken during the party. German Hockey Association apologised to the ship's captain, saying they'd pick up the tab until the tab grew to €500 million, which I think is 3.5 cents worldwide. The ship's operators say the damages included burns to the fine teak panelling, broken glass. It costs €75,000 for each day the ship is out of service, and with the damage estimated to take up to 6 days to repair, the figure of €450,000 is a realistic estimate. So the ship is on a 5-star level with high quality materials, so damage has become very expensive. The German Hockey League is bracing itself for a bill, with questions being asked whether the body is legally responsible for the actions of its members. the last word goes to the CEO, Torsten Bartel. He says, "We have not received any written demands from the shipping company yet, and we don't see ourselves as being held responsible, but we will deal with this in a calm and objective manner."
A very German response.
Yeah.
Pete, what have you got for us?
Yeah, well, it relates to, it's an NRL one, very close to our hearts, actually, gentlemen. There was a charity event in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of rugby league players don't get the credit they deserve for doing a lot of the work behind the scenes they do with various charities and so on. Your very own Robbie Farrow was invited along, and Phil Gould was actually invited along to speak, and he was offered an appearance fee, and not that appearance fee back. His response was he's already got enough jobs. What he did, he got up and did his speech for the charity, and then he asked all the audience, several hundred people there, I believe, to actually all get up and say a prayer. And he got them to all join hands and said, repeat after me, it's just for Penrith not to win the wooden spoon in 2012. And so if you change out of the eight, then maybe a little bit of divine intervention might be the way to go, because it worked all right for Penrith, who ended up finishing a very gallant 15th.
That was a difference. The Eels, Eels got the wooden spoon on the back of the lack of their prayers. Well, I am actually going on a bit more into detail from your one, Pete, last week about that place in Wales that I don't even know how to pronounce, unfortunately. Leanne, well, I'm not even going to try it because I know that that's completely wrong, but it's bog snorkeling, and apparently it saved Julia Galvin's life. More than a decade ago, the biology teacher from County Kerry in Ireland was laid up in hospital with sciatica in both legs. She couldn't walk and was bored senseless. At a past times, she picked up a Guinness record book and flipped in past to find about a bloke bog snorkeling and had an epiphany. She said if she ever walked again, she was going to become a bog snorkeler. She was on 16 painkillers a day when she decided that, apparently. Any of the fuzzy logic that resulted from those meds well cleared in time, but her passion grew, and in 1999 she went to that town that begins with L and finishes with Wells in Wales, which is the home of bog snorkeling, for her first competition. And this month she was back in the inaugural World Alternative Games, and she was a lone woman from Ireland competing in the event. She proudly declares herself the First Lady of Irish Bog Snorkeling. There's many specialties in the bog snorkeling discipline. There's bog snorkeling triathlon. Starts with a hilly 7.5-mile run, followed by two laps of the 60-yard trench and a 90-mile mountain bike ride. That probably take as long to complete, and that you'd need to have the shower afterwards. Then there's the classic bog snorkeling race. They don flippers, masks and fins for a 60-yard swim. And that's the one, I believe, that this lady, Miss Galvin, raced in. Apparently also Simon Stratton raced in it and popped the question to Eleanor Robson after they both cleared the muddy course. He said he wanted to do it to be a surprise and wanted something different. He proposed in Welsh, even though it's not his native tongue. I hope he had better pronunciation than I do. And the mountain bike bog snorkeling, which is just as crazy. Raced through a peat bog 6 feet deep and 45 yards long with lead weights on the frame and water in the tyres to reduce buoyancy. The riders have to wear snorkels and masks as they complete two laps, and apparently it's harder than you think. I don't know how hard they thought it would be. I'd imagine it would be pretty hard.
Yeah.
So there you go, guys. Bog snorkeling. And, yeah, that is World of Sport. Thank you so much, Pete. You'll be back next week as we whittle it down to 6 teams remaining.
Yeah.
And Tigers MS... thank you also for joining.
No worries.
No doubt. You can follow him on TigersMS78 on Twitter and listen to him on West Tigers Live, which will be coming, which will also be recording shortly and be up on the website at www.paulygsports.com. I am Paulie G. You can follow me on Twitter at Paulie G Sports. Thank you so much for downloading. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.
No problem. That was good.
It was.